You're listening to Veeam Partner Perspectives with Eric Dougherty.
Welcome to the Veeam Partner Perspectives podcast. I'm Eric Dougherty. My guest today is Jason Buffington, VP of Market Strategy for Veeam. Jason is a repeat guest, our second of the podcast, actually. Welcome back to the show. Glad to have you back.
It's about time you had me back. I was getting jealous of all you other guests.
Yes, Edwin was my first, so you get to follow in his footsteps of repeat guests.
Love that.
I'm excited to get into this. So before we get rolling, like I said, you've been on before, so we don't have to get too deep into it. But can you just give us a little refresher on what your background is?
Yeah, so I've been backing stuff up for 35 years. Only thing I've been doing since even before getting out of school, for most of it, I've been on the vendor or the partner side. I cut my teeth as an SC and a little reseller down in Dallas, Texas, and got a couple upgrades along the way. I've been at Veeam for about 6 years now. I work in the office of CTO, and I drive most of our independent research. And we use that research for marketing. We use it for product strategy, and we used to have something to talk about with all the cool kids like you.
I love it because I think some of the information, first off, you can't get the info that you guys get anywhere else, which was the whole reason that it came to be, right?
Yeah, we used to try to get that data, and it was like, well, no one's publishing it anymore. And part of the reason is because some of the analysts that used to do the most deep work on that, Veeam hiring them all. And so they stopped doing it after that. So yeah, so all the reports that you see now, they're both curated by, I used to be at ESG, Dave Russell used to be at Gartner. And so we used to do that there when Veeam was our client. And so now we do it in-house. And yeah, you actually can't get this data anywhere else.
And that's what's awesome about it. And it's such valuable data for customers, for partners, for us. I mean, there's just so much good information in there. And that's why I wanted to have you back on to talk about, well, what's new? Because we just back in January when we were all at Veeam Launchpad, our kickoff, the 2024 edition dropped, right?
Yep.
So lots of new updates.
Lots of new updates. And, you know, one of the reasons that we do it in January, you know, frankly speaking, is because every sales engine guts their pipeline and closes all their deals in Q4. And so you're looking for fresh new things to talk about in January, right? And so that's one of the reasons why this comes out every January, because between the go-to-market around wanting fresh things to say, and frankly, New Year's resolutions, I'm going to do better in backup this year, right? You know, you put that all together and we want to have something fresh to talk about each January. So yeah, so it came out this year. We just got through the first wave of all the content. We'll actually be continuing to spit out analysts and insights on it probably through April-ish, just in time for VeeamON coming up in June, because we do two reports a year. Mm-hmm. And that second one debuts in June. So I got to run out of DPR stuff because I got ransomware stuff to start talking about for the second half of the year.
That's right. And that's a fun one too. And that'll have some. So if anybody's looking for another reason to come to VeeamON, come to learn more about the ransomware stuff.
True story.
That's when a lot of it drops. But for now, we have data protection, which is an important part of the conversation. So I reviewed the report, and there were some interesting changes in there. What stood out to you the most in reviewing year over year?
You know, year over year, I think the one of my favorite things I always look for is when do we actually have consecutive lines along the way? And there's a couple consecutive trends that are, once you get three in a row, data really starts to bear out. By the way, as of the 2024 report, we've asked some of the same questions 5 years in a row. Right. And so you want to do some really clean math. Some of those responses over 5 years have captured 13,000 organizations' responses over time. And so you get some really cool lines that come out of that. You know, one of them probably is there was this myth, and it's been around for as long as I've been backing stuff up, that, you know, once you choose a backup solution, backup solutions are like religion or politics. You know, once you choose a side, you never change. And it wasn't true back then, and it's not true now, right? So this year's numbers show 54% of orgs plan on changing backup solutions in 2024. That doesn't mean that in December, 54% will have, but what it does mean is, let's take tech out of the picture, right? Let's talk about buying a new car. Yep. 54% of households are going to walk into a car dealership this year, right? They may not all buy, but 54% are going to walk into a dealership. there's another 19% that don't know if they're going to walk into a dealership. It's up to you as to whether they buy or not. But the fact that over half of orgs are looking for a new set of wheels, that makes for a really interesting set of conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's you're guaranteed when you're going to fill your pipeline.
Yeah.
The big end, whether what happens at the little end of that funnel is a different story, but the big end of the funnel is definitely going to be filled, but it's up to you as the partner, as the vendor to make them look at you, you know, like using your car thing. It's like, why are they going to look at a Toyota over a Ford over a Dodge?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And so we have a couple questions around that. You know, the first question is how many people are going to walk into a showroom, right? A little over half, 2/3 if you have a shiny billboard, right? The next question is, could they actually afford it? And it turns out 92% of organizations say they have increased their data protection budget year over year for 2024. So they're interested in walking in the showroom floor. They have more budget in their plan for this kind of purchase than they did this time last year. Right. If I'm a seller, it's nice that backup is broken. Right. And because that's the third question. You ask it yourself, right? You walk on that showroom floor or some nice guy in a sweater come and meet you in the parking lot. First thing they say, so what you looking for? What's going on? And so, you know, third year in a row, number one reason why an organization wants to change your backup solution is to improve reliability. That's like saying, hey, why are you getting a new car? Oh, well, because the other one breaks down 3 days out of five on my way to work.
Mechanic sees it more than I do. What good's that? Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, that's what we got. So they're walking in a showroom. They got money to burn. And all they're looking for is the darn thing to work better than it did before.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be an interesting year.
And who was the company that had that tagline a while back that was, it just works?
Oh, yeah, that was us.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Good call out on that.
So keep that in mind as you're talking through this. And there's a lot. It's not only that, and it's kind of, I thought this was the most interesting one to me. Talking about the roles, you brought some of the new information into this. Changing of roles.
Yeah. So, you know, if there's one thing that the last couple of years have taught us between the pandemic and all the other crap that's going on in the world right now is that the line between your professional world and the rest of you being a human, that line gets really, really blurry. And so one of the questions that we wanted to ask this year was specifically, how likely are you as a respondent interested in change, right? So we know more than half organizations as an organization are planning on changing solutions, but we asked, how likely is it that you will seek a new job outside of your current org within the next 12 months? 47%.
That's huge.
Okay. Now,
I mean, that's a huge number anytime.
Oh, it's even worse because if you look at, like, I don't know, 3-4 weeks after we published this report, LinkedIn did its own survey of likely to change, right? And then they broke that down by the industry that you're in. What LinkedIn said was the likelihood that IT professionals will change jobs in 2024. 47%, right? You got to love when data matches data.
Wow.
Right? So we are spot on for that. And here's the thing. So here's the rest of numbers, by the way. 47% intend to change. 19% undecided. Only 33% remain. Now, that doesn't mean 33% are happy and roll. It just means they don't see a horizon that they might be, you know, where the grass might not be greener. But even if you just focus on that 47%, I think there's three things that folks ought to really be paying attention to on that, regardless of whether how you self-identify on that question, right?
Yeah.
So number one, remember when we talk about things like ransomware and cyber and disaster recovery, for a lot of organizations, they're assuming that when everything goes bad on your worst day, that the team is going to rally and you're going to be able to try to get this stuff up and running again. Well, what if the smartest kid in the room is no longer in the room? Because for 47% of you, that is a real threat, right? The smartest kid in the room, the one who built all that stuff that you never got around to documenting, he's off on somebody else's payroll on your worst day. And that's going to make your worst day a lot worse, right?
That worst day could push the other 19% over the edge too.
Couldn't it though? That's what we call a resume generating event.
That's true. So you have to watch for that. And that's very interesting. And as a partner, that's opportunity.
Oh, it's upside.
They,
absolutely.
managed services, managed, you know, responses, having those emergency response teams available. It's going to become even more important because we just talked about only two stats so far and, you know, two pieces of the survey, and both of them around major change.
Yeah.
And so as a partner, you could come in and be the constant. You can help them with selecting the proper products to do what they need to do for data protection and help them with the services. Opportunities abound, and we're only on page two. That's kind of a good place to be for partners.
As an executive that's responsible for data protection, business continuity, I am supposed to be risk adverse, right? My whole role should be thinking about what could go wrong that could affect my business. How do I mitigate that? Right now, one of the key things that could go wrong is smartest kid in the room is no longer in the room. So how do I mitigate that? Professional services, mm-hmm. right? So when I embrace backup as a service, DR as a service, cyber resiliency as a service, when I embrace managed service providers, when I embrace GSIs, right? The head architect at Avar, all of those things not only supplement my skill set day in and day out, make my IT teams happier, but it also reduces my risk by giving me a buffer for when the smartest kid on my staff goes someplace else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. There is another part to this, by the way, and that is that for large enterprises who don't have those skills on their bench, the good news is 47% of the smart kids are on the street,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you do have that opportunity to potentially hire. And again, you know, talking to the reseller community, of which I used to be one, you know, what a great opportunity to take some of those smart kids that are used to one monolithic environment. Let's bring them onto your bench. That shores the needs for all of your subscribers along the way and gives you more value add, because 47% of that workforce is in flux. You should have as many smart kids on your bench as possible.
Absolutely. It gives you an opportunity for that. It also gives you an opportunity if you're the company looking at a new solution, don't limit your options by who you have on staff now, knowing that folks are changing all over the place. So not only do you have a chance to hire, some of your people are leaving. It could work out beneficially for everybody if they take another job because they want to continue working with product X and you're bringing in product Y, or you hire a product Y expert, you get some, you augment that with professional services, and you've refilled your team maybe for less money, who knows?
Oh yeah. I mean, if you think about, you know, every organization that's trying to go through things like digital transformation, IT modernization issues, most of them don't have the bench they need in cyber. Most of them don't have the bench they need in DX. Most of them can't spell Kubernetes. There is a K in there. Right. So for all of those reasons, actually strengthening your bench can really help not only mitigate risk, but for the sake of your customers, really accelerate the business.
Yeah. Move forward with, you start off having new offerings that you haven't been. Get out of that traditional, what the data center looked like 5, 6, 10 years ago, that a lot of partners still are kind of stuck in that. I'm seeing a lot more of my partners pivoting to these new workloads. This seems to be the year that a lot of them are looking at new opportunities for more services-based things, more cloud-based things. So definitely seems to go along with the trend of change.
Yep.
I think that's a good thing right now for all the partners as well, especially given the fact if that much change is happening at their customers, then they need to pivot as well. The report, again, it has a lot of things. What was the most shocking thing you think you saw in the report this year? Like, what did you look at and say, well, I didn't expect that?
You know, I guess other than the fact that when we ask organizations what's the number one thing that's going to drive change, reliability, you know, I mean, that it kind of breaks my heart a little bit, because it's not saying necessarily that the IT infrastructure of the world is broken, that every other backup product sucks. That's not the deal. I think the realization is just that we've never been as fractured as far as what the IT landscape looks like as we are right now, right? So, you know, 30 years ago, when I first started in this, there was one core server OS that you really leaned into. There was one data center architecture that you really leaned into. And, you know, there was best of breed in all the components, right? And, you know, it was NetWare, and then it was Windows, and then it was VMware. But there was always that one core scenario. There was a best of breed backup for it. Everything was great. But the problem is that the landscape today is so hybrid. And it's not just a cloud, right? So your data is in multiple IaaSs. You've got dedicated paths for file and for databases. You've got serverless. Every SaaS application looks a little bit different. It's just there's now so many things in that are separate, and the backup for each of them is so challenging. You don't get to use the same secret sauce for each one. And so when you put it together, the end state is that your legacy backup model is less reliable, and that's the justification. So that doesn't surprise me. I guess what I would say, though, is I don't see convergence happening in the next couple of years. If anything, I think we're going to continue to see further and further spread. You're not going to see convergence on the production side, so you better start looking for convergence on the protection side and looking for more tools. So, I mean, you'll see some of our tools and our instrumentation start to converge. We're probably not the only ones that are reading the tea leaves that way. But certainly that change vector, reliability, I think, is going to continue to be top of mind. I think that also happens because of, let's call it the proactive and the reactive. We cover the proactive, which is as you embrace more and more clouds, plural, right? It's more and more complex to back up. You're going to be reactive, or you're going to be proactive in backing up all of those clouds. The reactive side is, unfortunately, cyber is continuing to be more when than if. And so while not a surprise because of the third year we've asked this question, it's still probably the most startling data in the report overall. So shall we get into that?
Let's get into that.
All right. So one of the ugliest questions that we ask, and this is one of those questions where if you're listening to the podcast while you're driving, you may want to pull over for just a second. We ask organizations, how many ransomware attacks did your organization suffer in the last 12 months, right? Now, this does not include, if you go and look at my own firewall, I get hit by countries I can't pronounce multiple times per second on the outside of my firewall. We're not just talking about they tried. We're talking about successful breach in some way or another. Here's the fun part. 25% of organizations believe they were not hit at all. And I'm going to use the word believe. Let's talk about that for a second. Not in the teleprompter, believe. No, in a different way. 25% believe they didn't get hit in the last 12 months. And the reason I say that is because remember that in many cases, especially in larger enterprises, the bad actor has made their way in. Somebody clicked on that phishing link. They're hopping around inside your environment trying to find out how many different platforms they can exploit, how many time bombs they can drop, et cetera, for months before their presence is known. So for some of those folks, they've had a breach. They just haven't been asked for ransom yet.
Right.
But best case, one in four organizations said they weren't hit at all, which I know, simple math, three out of four got hit at least one time, often two, sometimes three, and actually 26% said, self-reported, anonymous, said they got hit four or more times.
That's so scary.
In a year. Eric, think about this. More organizations stated they got hit quarterly than believe they didn't get hit at all.
That's so depressing. That's like being a burglar and bumping into another set of burglars while you're in the house robbing it.
Oh, I'm so going to use that. Yes, I am so going to use that. Yeah.
That's sorry. You're taking the TV. I'm going to go get the stereo.
Yeah. It's like, hey, how are the kids? Oh, they're good. Yeah, how about yours?
Yeah. I'll see you down at the pawn shop later.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Now serving, ticket number 62.
Exactly.
Yeah. So now there's a lot of reasons why. You know, one of them is that in most cases, they don't actually know how the initial breach happened, right? And also the fact that once they're in there, they're dropping all kinds of secondary holes in, right? So unless you seal all the holes, it's kind of like, you know, I used to have a scorpion problem in the house. You got to fix every hole to the outside brick. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're going to come back. The other thing, which honestly just breaks my heart, is when you look at how organizations are planning on recovering from these massive crises, whether we're talking about ransomware, whether we're talking about fire, flood, et cetera, you know, the amount of organizations that still today still don't use orchestrated workflow, still don't use quarantine as part of their recovery work stream means that, you know, on your worst day, when your boss's boss's boss and her peers are all standing over your shoulder waiting to get the systems back online, you're going to start cutting corners. And what you're going to end up doing is reintroducing infection as part of the restore. And then you kind of deserve the second ransom bill. Yeah. You kind of do.
It's using the burglary analogy. It's replacing the window they broke into with a broken window.
It's not that broken. Maybe they won't try this one again.
Yeah. Right? They already tried this. They wouldn't think to check the same place twice, would they?
Yeah. You're giving the burglar too much credit. Right. So yeah, so that's for all those reasons, the fact that only one in four believe they didn't get hit, and that's if everyone's right, and at least one out of four knows they got hit at least quarterly. That's just the technical term is butt ugly scary.
Yeah.
That number got better though, right?
The 25% number, the none grew from last year though, didn't it? Because I could swear it was 85 before. Am I correct with that?
So yeah. So last year it was, I think it was 13% said they had not gotten hit. We're back up to 25. 25 was actually by coincidence number we had 2 years ago. So you could make the case that, you know, it was 25 best case and it's 13 best case. Now it's back to 25. So maybe we're improving it as an industry, but
take a few more years to see that, right?
Yeah. The ratio, right? That's the problem. So
yeah, the ratio is the real problem. Cause I always said with the old ones, when I was presenting the slides with that, I was like 85% have had one or more attacks and 15% of them are lying to you. Or they're about to have one, or they just don't know they're about to have one. I mean, nothing against them, but they either don't want you to know or they're about to have one, because eventually everybody, it just seems inevitable. So, but if that number 25 is accurate, then great, because that means people are learning, and not only learning, but doing something about it, something positive.
Yeah. And as soon as we breach over 50%, I'll be as optimistic as you. But until then, the industry as a whole, I mean, this is why we are in when, not if territory.
Absolutely. And this is, again, partners, listen, 3 out of 4 of your customers, statistically speaking, need your help with this stuff.
Yeah. So let's talk to the partners for just a second, because one of the things that I really hope comes out of this is please go download the whole report, right? We give it away for free. It's to help everyone have better conversations. Here's what I would tell you after, again, I started as a VAR. I've been doing this data for years. The fun part about the data is it's never wrong. And that's a bold statement. So let me correct what I mean by it. If I'm an architect for a reseller, and I'm walking in with 3 or 4 data points. Hey, you know, Mr. CIO, I know you've been talking a lot about cyber preparedness. Let me bring in some data from an outside agency, right? There's 2 ways this data goes down. You either share the data and the customer decision maker says, oh yeah, that's me. I have that problem. Okay, now we're off to now we can have a solution talk, right? Or the customer says, no, that's not my problem. My problem is... And then we're off to having a solution talk.
Yes.
Right. So either way, the data is just a clean way to start a conversation on where are you on this mall map? Okay, now we have something to talk about. So, you know, that's one of the reasons we give the data away. The other reasons, honestly, is because it helps us understand what should we as Veeam be building within the products and enabling through our channels to hopefully help you have interesting things to say.
Well, I'd be willing to venture that the data we've been collecting here has gone a long way into what we've just come out with all the integrations into security products, because we've been watching this data and seeing just the high speed merge of the security world and the data protection world as we've come along. And now here we are, we're able to integrate. I heard a lot more names coming up soon. I was on a call this morning and I heard a lot more brand names coming that we'll be integrating with soon too.
We're not going to cover those on this webcast. We're not.
I'm not going to divulge them here. Not allowed.
All right. No, but you're right.
I won't say them.
Here, I'll IM you 3 new ones. We're only doing this on audio. For example, the number one thing folks said they were looking for in their next backup solution is integration of backup with cyber detection tools. Right. One of the top 5 reasons they said they were looking to change backup solutions was because their backup tool does not integrate with cyber. One of the other ones in the top 5 was because they didn't have immutability or hardened repositories, which we know year over year is a favorite target of the cyber villain. So for all those reasons, yeah, some of the stuff we came up with in 12.1 absolutely was a direct response, because a lot of these questions we ask year over year. So as customers start to say, hey, I kind of think I need this. Hey, I need this, right? You know, by time that it sees daylight, we've been asking this question for a while. It's already in plan. It's already on roadmap.
Yeah. We're not coming up with things that, yeah, it's, we're not coming up with things that partners don't want. We're not building it and they will come. We know they're going to need it because they've been pointing us in this direction.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, some of the great conversations we've had over the years between the, our partner advisory councils, our VCSP groups, the forums that we do, the user groups we run at Veeamon, right? All of those give us early measures. There's two ways to look at research. We do what's called quantitative research, which is where I go and ask 1,200, 3,000, 4,200 folks, what are you thinking about? And then there's qualitative research, where we take that data back to a select subset of whom we believe are delivering bleeding edge, best of breed technology type outcomes, who are really plugged into what their customers are looking for. And we say, let's talk about the why, right? Quant data is good for the what. Qual data is good for the why. We put those two things together. That shapes most of our core strategies along the way.
And that's very important to keep in mind. This isn't just a bunch of survey questions that are thrown in. You're doing serious data analysis with this. It's not just, that's what I want people to understand. Given that's why I always ask about your background. I want people to realize this just isn't us sending out a Survey Monkey survey and hoping a bunch of people respond and just collecting the stats. No, we're doing a lot of work with this information to provide information.
Yeah. And we cut it for size of org. We cut it by geo. We cut it by persona. So for example, in the data protection trends report is vetted IT leader or IT implementer responsible for the data protection strategy of their enterprise overall. The ransomware report that we come up with in June actually has three personas. The CISO or other equivalent executive, the security professional, so let's call that the prevention expert, and then the backup admin, right? So the remediation expert, right? And so in some of the questions, some of the best enlightenments we have is understanding how those three personas in the same organization do not agree, right? And so how do you then align to equip each one of them? Because, and by the way, they have different goals, right?
Sure.
You do what you get paid for. Yeah. How do we make sure that we have stuff that aligns to those broader goals along the way?
Well, we always joke about that all the time, that it's, you know, security's job is to make things more secure, but unfortunately it always seems to also make everyone's job a little bit harder too, because, you know, yes, it's much easier if there's no windows and doors. If I could just run out the side of my living room wall, it'd be easier, right? I just leave the room wherever I want.
My job would be boring if we did that. I would all be challenging my ability to do things, right?
So. We'd all be bored. Yeah. You know, it's a hassle to stop and unlock my front door, but good news is it's also a hassle for everybody else. You know, it's what keeps my TV in my living room.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. It's something I was just looking at. It was the SLAs for coming back around for getting things going. The stats I'm looking at here, if they had to restore.
Yep.
Holy smokes. 60%, over 60%. I'm not actually doing the math, but over 60% of organizations would take at least a week to get recovered.
Yeah. All right. So this is one of the new questions that we asked for this year. So as I said, I've been doing backup for a long time. I was actually a DR planner 20 years ago. And so when you do DR, the most important thing in DR is not the plan, it's the test, right? You know, and so one of the questions that was asked was, what percentage of your servers met their SLAs on your last large scale test, right? And the magic number here is 58%. Now, I got a kid in college, Eric, and if she comes home and says, hey, my big final, I got a 58. Right? Unless it's out of 50 and there was extra points, I'm not happy with that answer.
I'm not
right?
either. I'm not, they're not going back next semester.
No.
They're probably not invited back next semester.
They might not be invited back. Now, my daughter's amazing. Last time she got a 58, it was out of 50, but that's a different story. but here's the thing. So 3 out of 5 servers came back online, barely, right? Not quite. 2 out of 5 of whatever you are relying on for your business process didn't spin up on time. So think about it this way. It's Monday. You powered up your laptop, right? let's say you've got five things that you live off of during your day. Outlook's probably one, Teams is one. I'm more of an Excel guy. You're probably PowerPoint. You know, you got a CRM system and a travel booking tool. That's about it, right? Yep. Pick any two of those that don't come on and you're going to have a really crappy Monday.
Yep.
Right. And that's what actually is happening is that that's what 58% means is two out of five didn't make it. So then we asked a follow-up question. The follow-up question was, okay, so regardless of the last time that you did or didn't do one, if you had to spin up 50 servers, and admittedly, remember, these are all enterprise organizations, have to be more than 1,000 employees, right? 50 servers in an enterprise is not a lot. I mean, that's 2-3 hosts. If you're all virtualized, it's a couple racks. If you got a bunch of physical, only a third, 32% of folks said they could do it within a business week. So now use that Monday example. You powered up, two out of your five apps didn't come back online. Yep. You call IT and they say, you should take this week off. We think it'll be back up by next Monday. And if it's not, you could call another service ticket, right? That's what the data says. Yeah. And that is, again, technical term, butt ugly scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my email's not going to work all week. And that's the other thing I think that is too. It's the systems. It's not ranking which are most important. What if the three of the five that came up are places 3, 4, and 5? Like I said, if it was my email was one of the ones that didn't come up, I probably, you know, if Word didn't come up, all right, fine. You know what? I'll type my document in my Outlook, but I can find a way to do it.
Notepad for everything.
Exactly. Yep. Notepad always works for everything. It's even better now. They've improved it a
smidge. Or Edlin. If you know what Edlin is.
I have not used that. I've used Notepad Plus.
No, Edlin was back when everything was in DOS and command code.
Oh, geez. So. Okay, you're going way back for me. I did have WordPerfect back in the day. I remember the first time one of my friends got Windows, was all impressed. And I was like, what's your point? I'd been using Mac since like 1985, so I was not impressed.
Hey, here's what I want the resellers, though, the partners, to hear about this.
Yes.
The problem with the 58% stat is it's either really good news or really bad news. And here's why. If you are using orchestrated workflow, meaning that you're using a canned recipe that every time you try to recover a server or servers, it's the same set of steps. It powers up these VMs. It changes the IP addresses. It rebases DNS over here. If it's using orchestrated workflow, then 58% is actually a really good number because now you know the 58% where the recipes work, and you can focus on what do you need to fix on the other 42% of recipes to make sure that you can actually be there on your worst day. So if you're using orchestrated workflow, 58 is a good number. You just got rid of half of your questions. You know where to focus for the next test. If you are not using orchestrated workflow, it's like playing roulette, right? You throw the ball once, it's red or black, right? You throw the ball again. The first test had nothing to do with the second test.
Second test, yes.
Right? So you have even money again all the way through whether or not you're going to make it or not. So if you're using orchestrated workflow, each time 58 next time turns into 72, turns into 83, turns into 90, turns into a non-disaster event. If you are not using orchestrated workflows, you're rolling a 100-sided die and trying to come up with double aught each time. And you will never make that. Again, resume generating event.
Absolutely. And that's that orchestrated recovery is so important because you can retest more often. I mean,
yes. We
all remember the days where it was quarterly tests. If your biggest companies had quarterly tests and they were torturous, there are so many things you can do now to orchestrate that, do exactly what you said and know that things are going to work, as opposed to being pretty sure things are going to do what they are. You can know. And again, if you know that these are all going to come up and I have to focus my energies on some manual processes for this small list, okay, and that's where you get the people that can do it in less than a week. You know, sometimes it just takes time because data is data and data sets can be huge. So you're not going to get it down to immediate. Maybe you can find ways with replication and things like that to get it near immediate for large data sets. It all depends. And that's why you want to hire a good partner who can go through this process and analyze your environment and come up with plans that prioritize what's important to you.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be nice if that partner was using some kind of a dynamic cloud infrastructure so they could actually test for you? Mm-hmm. And then they can, while you're working on things that matter to the business, they can focus on whittling down that 42% Yes. Test over test over test. I actually did a survey. This was, I guess, my last year before I joined Veeam. So 6 years ago, when cloud-based DRaaS was first coming into the market. And we asked a survey of, on average, how often did you test? So this was 2018, 6 years ago. How often do you actually do a DR test? And those folks that were using self-managed data centers, or they were using a hot site like a SunGuard, Comdisco, on average, once every 9 months. Those folks that were using cloud-based services, once every 5 weeks.
That's such a difference maker.
Well, and there's two things. One, they didn't have to disrupt their primary infrastructure, right? They could spin it up in a sequestered environment. And it was only on demand, right? Use it when you need it and then power it off when you don't. But the other thing was is that they were able to test granularly, right? They could test this rack. They could test that rack. You know, they could test one set of workloads at a time. I did some interviews afterwards, and a couple of the really large enterprises, their test time went off the charts in the wrong direction. So I called and said, why did your numbers go the wrong way? And they said, oh, we don't actually have to test anymore because now at the first sign of trouble, we just switch over to our cloud instance and it's live. So we don't test. We just live in this new truth and never looked back. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. Mic drop moment.
Yeah. Yeah. They had an epiphany and it really worked for them. That's fantastic.
Sure. Yeah. If you knew that the first sign that that one wheel had three ounces of pressure less than the other three wheels and you could hit a button, and all of a sudden the clean spare from the trunk just kind of popped right on for you and you just kept on going, would you care at that point? You would drive your trip.
I dream of auto-inflating tires. We've seen them in Bond movies for years.
Yeah. Do it like that.
Yeah. I want that bad.
I still want the underwater Lotus, but that's aging me a little bit.
Yeah, that would be cool. An underwater Lotus Esprit would be very cool.
True story.
So any last thoughts on what we've talked about today, what you've seen, something we didn't cover that would be eye-opening to the partners, or something to get them to go do more with this information, or seek out more speaking engagements that you've done?
Yeah. Well, so we broke down almost all the data that's in this research into six or seven blogs, right? And so we've been popping them out pretty much every Tuesday since January began. So, you know, go find your favorite ones and go from there. I think would be one thing I would tell you about. We also took all the data. We talked about a lot of data today, Eric. So what we did was we broke down all of the headlines. We broke down into 4-minute videos. And so I'm going to tell the partners the same thing that I tell our own sellers, our own SEs. And that is, you know, if you have a day where you're going to be thinking about pipeline for 365, or a day where you're going to be looking at just on ransomware solutions, or I'm sitting in a parking lot, I'm about to go talk to the CIO about cyber preparedness, right? There is a 4-minute video that you can watch that just gets that one data point back in your head, get those stats back in your vernacular. So go check out the blogs from that. All of the stuff that I publish I is on Veeam.com. It's also on my blog, jasonbuffington.com, so you can find them from there as well. But go watch those 4-minute videos. You know, just it gives you something fresh to say with data you can't get anywhere else, and hopefully it helps benefit the customer to get a better outcome.
Perfect. That's what they need. That those little chunklets of data. That's a Joe Monahan word, chunklets. It's copyright him, but it works. A couple minutes, you hear it, you learn it, you remember it, you go use it. That's the beauty of it. You don't listen to 3 hours worth of stuff and remember what was the first thing you said. Especially when you're doing something you said. If you're building and do prospecting or our EMP days that we're doing now, great little tool for that we could use to have something. And that everything for partners, it's on Pro Partner Portal as well. So search out there and you'll find all this information and prepare yourselves for your next Call Blitz days. Jason, I thank you again for coming on. This was absolutely fantastic.
Thanks for the friendship. You know, thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for the chance to reach out. You know, I started as a VAR SE. And so any chance I can come back and hang out with the cool kids, I'm grateful for it.
You're always welcome. I can't wait to see you in the field again. We always have a nice, enjoyable evening of good conversation and good spirits.
True story.
Talk soon, my friend.
Cheers.
This has been Veeam Partner Perspectives with Eric Dougherty. Thank you for listening.